with us. This is Sports Drinks, and I am Tiffany Brown.
And I am Katie Steele.
And we are here for episode number 3. Katie, we're at number 3. What do you think?
Yippee! It has been so fun. I am, I'm loving the connection with you, with the folks who are submitting questions. It's stretching our thinking. Hopefully for you all who are listening, it's stretching your thinking. It's been super enriching. What do you think?
I agree. What a blast to just have this time with you. I love that we can do this. And one of the things that I've been thinking a lot about, and I think for, you know, when we've, or when I've listened to other podcasts, it takes a little bit for people to find their flow and their niche. And I think we're kind of figuring it out. And, you know, I appreciate everybody kind of hanging in there with us as we, you know, tool or tinker around with what that's going to be as we keep going. So it's just, it's been a blast. What a great opportunity to just be in conversation about the things that we love so, 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 so much.
100%. And I don't know if folks know this, but we don't live in the same area. So this is such a treat for us to get this bonus time together, because you are one of my very favorite people to collaborate with. And I learn so much from you, and I love listening to you and partnering with you. So it's such a bonus to get this extra time.
Oh, it's so sweet. I feel the same. And I want to tell everyone of how much fun it was for us to figure out the technology side of podcasting, not being in the same room, where that is the luck of the draw we had with our first two episodes, y'all. We got to be in the same location. And today our recording was different, and it took us a little bit of time to figure it out. But I will say, at a process level, Katie, look at how great we did to rule out what the issues were. And here we are. We figured it out. So good for us.
Good for us. And you know what? I'll just let everybody in on a little secret that I'm about the least tech savvy person on the entire planet. And so when we have tech issues, which, you know, tech is tech, it generally comes back to me of not having the right speakers, something connected. So Tiffany, thanks for your patience. It's always a journey.
It's always a journey. It's a little game that we like to play, which is, what is going to be the issue today? What is really fascinating, if you think about it, is two people who are not super tech savvy have found their way of making a podcast and getting it out in the world. So for that reason, you know, kudos to us for that. But we're both coming off a spring break. And how's it been? You all traveled a little bit, I think, correct?
We did. We took a trip, the five of us, to Palm Springs, and spent the first half, maybe 70 some percent sick, like passing illness back and forth. And like, I mean, sick, like didn't get out of bed for a couple of days. And Tiffany knows me, so this like really speaks to the magnitude of that, of not getting out of bed or pushing through is like not something that happens. I usually can like find a way. I can usually just find some extra gear in there, and it was not there, nor was it there for our kids. So that was really sad. But there was, I thought you'd get a kick out of this, Tiffany, because Tiffany and I have, it's like such a complementary dynamic that we have, or that we've created together. And so Adam, at one point when, you know, we were sick, nobody was feeling great, he's like, you know what? I think that as a family, we should instill this rest day philosophy, which like, if you saw our family calendar, there's no way that's going to fly. But his intention was of like, we need to slow down some and have some rest. And Tiffany was the first person. You were the first one to pop into my head of like, Tiffany would love that we're having this conversation though, because it's definitely a growth edge.
You're right. We complement each other on that, because I think, that used to be me. And for reasons that were, you know, my own issues of just not being able to slow down. And then in the process of learning to slow down, I've now swung this other way and sometimes have a hard time getting the gear to get going. And, But I love that for you all. I hate that it came out of being really sick, because I'm imagining you all in a hotel room, traveled somewhere, the sun is shining, the heat is out there. And for those of you that are not accustomed to Oregon weather, we are at the time of year where we have been inside dodging the rain for a couple months now, and we are hungry for some sun and some heat. So there you were in a space with all of that, and you had to stay inside. And oh, I feel for you on that too. That sounds terrible.
You know what? I think this is one of the, like, and this can be a whole nother podcast episode of, I think this is an athlete topic, right? Of that rest versus output. How much do I restore? How much do I put out? So I think this is a topic we need to make sure we're carving out space for. So I really want to name that for people to know, like, that is a struggle. That is a learning curve that changes through different life cycle stages, but is constantly something we're assessing
Well,
and needing and for different reasons at different stages of life.
Totally. And in terms of, like, when you're saying, when your body finally is just saying, oh yeah, we're stopping, there is no other way to push through, that's usually when we realize what a stark contrast it is from the go, go, go to a rest period. And we get to feel it a little bit. So, well, I'm team, rest day, whatever that looks like for the family. I'm sure, that it will be a tug of war in many ways to see how that will go over time, but we can keep checking in and see if you're able to navigate a rest day.
And for those of you that also follow Athletes Mental Health Foundation on Instagram, anytime you see a post or a story about rest, it's from Tiffany, a direct message to your ear that we will often then take a sidebar of a text conversation of, like, you know what? That was so necessary. Thank you for bringing that to the equation.
I mean, I think it's like you're saying, we'll set it aside for now, because we know we need to do a whole episode, but I think it is such a part of what is ingrained in so many of us to not stop and not rest, but then especially for athletes and what happens in terms of just that mentality and the expectations of continuing to go, go, go. And so I think there's definitely some unlearning that's necessary there, which is why I post about it so much on our Instagram. Oftentimes we need those outside external reminders that it is okay to take a moment and rest, whatever that looks like. So, I'm so glad. But did you all get a chance to enjoy some of the break down there?
Totally. And any chance to be together is great. And it was nice. We didn't have anything booked, so it was lovely. How about yours? How was your spring break?
School was shut down. Yep. So, we go back on Monday. I spent my time at the Oregon coast. And so it was, you know, the happiest place on earth for me. And I just frolicked. I mean, that was the only word I can really kind of say, just frolicked and enjoyed both the beach and the sand and the quiet and nature. Had some pretty epic sunsets at the same time of some really, I mean, fantastic thunderstorms. And so it was a rest period as much as it was just tapping into that other part of me that's not, you know, leading and doing and guiding and administrating and all the things that come with day-to-day life in the work world. So I would like it to go on for a whole nother week, but alas, we go back on Monday. Womp womp.
Shucks. I mean, frolic. That sounds pretty delightful. So restorative. I'm glad you got that time.
Yeah. Thanks. I feel like I've been pushing away the sickness like you're talking about. So knock on wood that can continue. So let's get going. We got some great topics today. And, you know, the first is our, you know, go-to segment where we're, you know, calling it the par for the course. And if you're new to the podcast, the aim of this segment is really to call attention to a conversation that's happening out in the world in some way, whether it be through social media or print or online news or some version of that. And, you know, us talking through what that is, but then also what it's par for the course. It's so typical. And so We're going to talk about Kim Mulkey and the new Washington Post article that just came out. And the author of that is Kent Babb. It's a fantastic article and a really nice review of Coach Mulkey's kind of history and as far back as, you know, her childhood. And so just a shout out to the piece in general. But the part that I think is important for us to talk about is what's being discussed in terms of Coach Mulkey's coaching career. So there's a lot to the article, but I just want to get your take on what did you think of it and what stood out to you as being important for us to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, so many layers, right? I think that's the interesting part of it. I think one thing I really want to punctuate right out of the bat is we do not know her. We've never met anybody who has played for her. That was not even in the interviewing of the athletes for the book. We didn't cross paths with anybody who has worked with her directly. So just like you all, we only know this from what we have read over years. And I think that's important. But I think the themes that are important to address are what we hope to see for coaches in general, right? We have to have some systems of accountability. We have to be having these conversations. So her or others, the conversation of the spectrum of coaching styles is what we need to be addressing. What about from your perspective? Where do you feel like is the best launching point?
I mean, you're right. There's so many nuances and layers. I think, you know, when I read the article, I was captured by how much of it was reiterating what we've already heard about her as a coach. You know, previous players talking about how she's, you know, one quote in there was that she's a great coach, but she made my life hell. Discussions about how she's, you know, quite homophobic in the way that she handles sexuality and identity with her teammates or her team. So those things I think were not new, and yet, you know, stark reminders of how often the role that coaches have in the lives of athletes is so major, and we just tend to kind of sweep over it half the time if the coach is successful. And so, I don't know, there's, I guess the takeaway for me, or the launching place, the par for the course, is how often these conversations about a coach will happen. And it seems like the automatic response is, especially if they're good, and good meaning they're winning games and they're winning championships, that it's just how they coach. That's just who they are. And we seem to just excuse the, you know, quote unquote bad behavior because they're successful. And I think to me, that's the part that you and I feel so strongly about, and why, you know, we care about mental health issues with athletes, because that is not the way to be measuring success of a coaching staff. I don't care what level you're coaching, I will die on that hill that if you are not good to your athletes, you are not a good coach. And yet we continue to kind of excuse it. So her response to the article was, you know, that it was all a lie, and it was, you know, this hit piece on her. And you know, she had lawyers and she's going to push back. And but I just have a really hard time accepting details and knowing that there's these athletes that are speaking out about their experience, and yet we're supposed to just accept them as false because she says so.
Totally, 100%. And I think that punctuation of coaching is a spectrum, right? The way in which a coach coaches, it is a spectrum. There is room for flexibility. There is room for a coach to bring their own flair or personality or style to that. There is the far end of the spectrum that is not okay, right? That would be the homophobia. Any type of misogyny, racism, these are things that are absolutely not acceptable. This mistreatment of athletes, and human beings, really. those are outside of this bell curve. So those have to be addressed. That is not an area in which there is room for questioning. Where there is room for questioning is the yelling and the intensity and the being a lot, if the languaging that we're hearing is those are things of that we can look at. What is the impact on the athlete? And it was in this article, it's been in all of these articles about her, about other coaches. There's, if there's one person who says it was harmful or that they, it made their life hell, there's somebody else to say, she saved my life. Right. And what I really want to punctuate here is that is normal, right? That is, there are going to be, I had a conversation with somebody recently even about my own experience, and they kind of look at me flabbergasted of like, huh, fascinating. I didn't have any of that. And we were in the same era of, in which we were running. Yeah, totally. Yes. I bet there are people that I ran with who had a lovely experience when I was there. Mm-hmm. I had a terrible experience. Both can be true. Both can be true. It is, however, the coach's responsibility to have this level of attunement of what is happening for each athlete. It isn't a conveyor belt system. It's not a one-size-fits-all system. It's human beings, right? So while there are these things that are for sure off the table, there are going to be different philosophies that work for one athlete that isn't going to work for another athlete.
Yeah, I appreciate what you're naming too about, you know, it's nuanced in such a way where when we're talking about coaches, I'm sure from her perspective, well, sounds like she's making a pretty strong claim that everything she does is fine. And probably because she's had athletes who have appreciated her style or assistant coaches who have supported her style of coaching. And yet what we come back to time and time again is being able to hold space for the fact that there are times where maybe being brash, being intense, being like you're saying, a lot is, it works for people. It gets them out of their comfort zones. It gets them to push further. It gets them to, you know, be able to accomplish things that the average athlete would not be accomplishing. And, you know, people have different methods of doing that. And like you're saying, there are times where that A doesn't work for everybody. And some of the behaviors in effort to do that, even though well-intentioned, perhaps, are just flat out not okay. And I think that's where, you know, that nuance and that conversation is what we tend to miss. And so to me, the continuation of, you know, pushing back on a coach for what they're doing, it seems like either it's bad and we just decide it's bad, or it's good because they have so many wins, so many championships. They have players that go on to do, you know, incredible things professionally, and that they get to hold their hat on that and then not be accountable or not be in a conversation about parts of their coaching philosophy or parts of their behavior that are just flat out not okay.
I mean, you're hitting the nail on the head, in my opinion, of the biggest red flag is if somebody is unwilling to say, let me learn. Let me hear from that athlete that I made their life hell. I want to learn from you. I want to understand, what was your experience? Let me learn and let me make changes, rather than like, this is my way or the highway, get on or get off. This is either a fit for you or it's not. If a coach is willing to have a conversation and have a level of humility that their way might have been negatively impactful to somebody, that's a huge win. If the coach is unwilling to do that, that to me is potentially one of the greatest red flags. It's their way or the highway. And we know about all humans, that isn't how that this operates, right? So our intent might be different than the impact. And are we willing to hear that? My intent wasn't to cause harm. I'm going to guess she will say, my intent wasn't to cause harm. I didn't want to cause harm. Right. But you did. Are you willing to hear that? And I think that's the part that we want for coaches to take away of, hear them. It doesn't mean you are right. It doesn't mean anybody is right or wrong, but can there be a conversation to explore what the impact was and where we can all learn and grow and evolve?
I love that. Yeah. The naming of the impact, I think, is huge, because in this article alone, some of the things that were named were that players were called out if they gained weight, and they were instructed to do public weigh-ins in front of the whole team. They were shamed in terms of body size, and that was kind of a primary coaching tactic reported by players, was this shaming of them. And I think, you know, where you and I have had conversations in the past, and not necessarily on this podcast yet, is there's some very clear behaviors that are not okay. Those all land on the don't do these things. These are, you know, prone to be abusive behaviors as a coach. Not just a list of, oh, please don't do that. It'd be great if you didn't. But we would put that on the do not ever call out players for gaining weight. Do not ever weigh your players in front of others. Do not ever shame your players in terms of their looks, their identity, their appearance, or even their personhood as being a way to get them to do something that you want them to do. That is not the way to do it. And we will, you know, we know that for sure. So we know that she's having impact in this really negative way for some of her athletes. And I think, like you said, it's pretty possible that she, you know, thinks that her intentions were, well, clearly she's been, you know, she's used some press conference time during the tournament to comment on this. And she's, you know, been saying pretty clearly that she, you know, she has no reason to feel bad about anything that she does, that, you know, she's fantastic, basically, is my takeaway every time I listen to her speak. I'm not a fan. I'm happy to say that out loud. But I think what's really tough is this idea that a coach is either intense or they're super cuddly. And that was one of the statements in the piece too, was, you know, a quote in there was something like, coaches don't win 700 and some games or reach this, you know, this many Final Fours and championships by being cuddly. And I think that's where you and I really have some, you know, we have some opinions about. We don't want you to be cuddly either. You do not need to be a coach. I don't even really know what that looks like. I just love that as a word to describe a coach. Like, you're either intense or you're cuddly. But it really is about be intense, but then also be able to show up and understand that you have impact. And we all have impact. You and I have impact in each other's lives all the time. We've had moments where you and I have had to come together and go, ugh, I don't like how that conversation went. Can we, you know, try again? We're human. We say things we don't want to say. So inevitably, Kim Mulkey has done that numerous times. And yet, has she been able to show up and understand that she's having this impact is the big question mark.
100%. And what all coaches, that if there's one thing you can come back to, it's that. And if you can't sit with the question, then that is exactly the problem.
That's the problem.
That is the problem. Mm-hmm. Be intense. Nobody's like, be intense, have high expectations, win, focus on outcome. All of those things are completely appropriate, right? So we've now listed a thing of don't do this, and those things are also okay. So those two lists that we outlined, those can coexist. Mm-hmm. They can coexist.
Totally. And I think that's, you know, I think that's the par for the course here is this belief that they can't, right? That a coach is either intense or they're cuddly. They're either a winning coach or they're not good at their job. And we keep putting it on this binary versus being able to look at conversations and to be able to say with nuance, you know, Coach Mulkey is very accomplished as a coach in terms of her outcomes. She has led teams to championships. She has led teams to big wins. She herself as an athlete was incredibly successful. And she's also done things that are problematic and are not okay. And this isn't, you know, those things are not debatable. Both of those things are exactly true. And yet they coexist in the same reality. And I'm just hoping that anyone who reads an article about her, or, you know, anyone who's even talking about a coach and their success, is that we're able to look at the full picture and we're not hanging our hat just on what's happening in the win and loss columns. Okay, well, let's wrap it up there. I feel like this is similar to conversations we've had about coach abuse. And we might just need to do a whole episode on that. So, yeah, you all can't see us, but we're nodding our heads in agreement on that, because it is
we totally do, and we need to feel peel back the gender pieces of it, I think there's a lot there. This isn't just for her. We need to have the same expectation for male coaches. So yes, stay tuned. We will do an entire episode on the complexities.
Well, that'll take us then to, let's get into our question for the week and where we're going to spend some time. And, you know, one of the things for you all to know as listeners, feel free to send us your questions that you have for us. We've been so lucky to have folks that have submitted their questions to us that have guided our conversation so far in these episodes. And we really want to tune into where the other questions may be, curiosities, issues that people are dealing with. You're welcome to make a 30-second audio recording and send our way. We'll put some instructions of that in the show notes. And then also we'll maybe talk about it at the end of this episode as well about how to do that. So we would just love to hear from more folks. Today, we're really lucky. We're going to hear from Giovanna. And it sounds like the question is around performance anxiety. And so let's just hear what Giovanna is asking. And then we will jump into maybe kind of banter a bit about what we think it might be.
Hey, Sports Shrinks. I'm a huge fan of your show. This is Giovanna, and I'm calling from Riverside, California. I've been wondering why performance anxiety is so prevalent in sports. Is it really that different from typical anxiety?
Okay. Performance anxiety. I know this is
great
your
question.
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think one of your favorite questions probably to date that we've had. So yeah, what do you think? What are your thoughts about why performance anxiety is just so prevalent?
I mean, I love this question. I love the topic because I mean, my shoot from the hip response is I wish we could get rid of the term performance anxiety, period. Like, ban it. Like, it isn't a thing. Because
that's a hot take. Can we just talk, like,
I'm
do you realize what you're
that
saying?
Passionate
that's
about it.
I know. And I'm just thinking, like, someone's probably listening right now being like, what in the actual heck are you saying? So I just wanted to name it out loud that if this is a hot take that you have about performance anxiety. So now you need to say why. Like, why do Fair. You want to ban it from our conversation?
So I have gotten, over the course of being in clinical practice, countless referrals for performance anxiety. And it is oftentimes what brings an athlete in the door. Their coach sent them, their parents sent them, they are sending themselves to go and work on performance anxiety. And what I will say is I have never actually worked with an athlete where that is their presenting need. I have never seen an athlete's performance faltering because of performance anxiety. Athletes get nervous. Preparing for competition is a lot. That is nerve-wracking. However, performance anxiety is not the cause for deep performance. And that is why I want to get rid of the terminology, is because people think if they can extract performance anxiety, they will see a better outcome for their performance. And what we actually need to be doing and what we see clinically is we need to be addressing the underlying needs that might be anxiety. It might be an eating disorder. It might be trauma. It might be depression. It might be grief. There's 8 million other things that are underlying the experience for the athlete that is causing their performance to falter.
Mm. Yeah. Like there's this, it's almost like, the age old, you know, statement that people make when they want couples therapy and they say we're having communication issues and, you know, that be the reason that they're coming in. And we all usually kind of, you know, giggle a little bit of like, of course you have communication issues, but yet let's talk about, you know, we know there's so many more things that are underneath. It's not just about how to talk to each other, even though we know that's huge. But there's also, you know, all those other layers. I agree. I mean, I think what I love about what you're saying is it's the ticket to get people in the door. And so on the one hand, I think that is why, you know, Giovanna is saying like, why is this kind of being talked about so much, or why is it so prevalent? And I think because it is the way that people say that something's going on and they don't know what to do about it and they need help or support. And that gets them in to do that. And yet, it sounds like what you're saying is, you know, the idea of performance anxiety is not necessarily, I mean, we definitely aren't going to look it up in our diagnostic manual, but we might be able to see that these kind of other issues or concerns are present for someone outside of just this anxiety to perform.
Correct. And while I love that it gets people in the door, because anything that's going to bring somebody into a therapy room, I'm generally in favor of. I think where it misses the mark for me in terms of athletes is that it puts the problem back on the athlete and about their outcome and lack of points or shots that they're making or how they should be performing on the court or the rink or the field or the track. And instead it's like, what are you actually needing? Because when we say you have performance anxiety, we are pinning that there's a problem on them and that is why their performance is faltering. And instead being like, how can I help you? What are you needing? That is a symptom. Performance anxiety is a symptom of an underlying need. And so, if we could meet the athlete with more curiosity and compassion, we know this about athletes. Athletes are so driven, they operate in overdrive. It comes back to our earlier conversation of rest, right? They're not going to pump the brakes. They're so hypercritical of self. The last thing that we need as a society is one more thing to pin on them. And instead, if we're going to be addressing mental health, which is what we want to see happen, how can we be doing that from a place of curiosity versus now you go work on your performance anxiety so that you can show back up and actually contribute to the team how we need you to contribute to the team? That's really like my like gut problem with it is athletes have so many things are already juggling. They need a little bit of support in helping themselves pump the brakes a little bit versus this is still just like full pedal onto the accelerator.
Well, and I think in what you're saying right there too is when we're naming it as performance anxiety, we're saying you, the athlete, have the problem. You, the athlete, need to go and deal with that problem. And then you, the athlete, have to come back with the problem fixed. And so you do what we need you to do for the team. And I think that, you know, it individualizes it in such a way that almost immediately counts out that the pressure from the coach, the training that's associated, the relationships within the team or within the athletic department, or the way a coach is trying to get a performance out of an athlete, it kind of takes all of those things and sets it aside because it's immediately putting it on the individual. And you know, if you've heard us say this before, we're going to say it probably nearly every episode, in some way, shape, or form. The system itself is going to have influence. And if there's not room to talk about the system, the performance anxiety is going to stick around. And so to me, it just is the response to it is so individualized that it makes it so we can't comment on what's happening around the athlete. And for that, I totally agree with you because I think it makes it so we aren't able to tackle the relationship levels and the behaviors, maybe even the bad behaviors of a coach or coaching staff. And we just see it as an outcome issue, which again, you and I have such strong feelings about.
100%. I think to her question, that's why we're hearing about it so much, is everything you just said is it puts the responsibility on the athlete rather than zooming out and saying, let's look at all of these other factors, right? No, you just go figure yourself out. And so we hear about that. It's kind of this like buzzword in a sense. We know we need to be talking about mental health, and that seems to be the spot that people are so magnified in on versus looking up and zooming out at the entire picture and complexity of the system, the coaches, the team, all of these other components of it that really can generate a far bigger change.
Totally. And I think about, you know, Giovanna said that she was a soccer player. And, you know, I'm thinking, you know, perhaps as a soccer player, she had times where, like you were saying initially, you know, you get nervous before a match or you're, you know, a lot is on the line in terms of the season. It's a must-win, game, whatever might be happening for an athlete. The nervousness and the anxiety going into that is completely normal. We would be surprised probably if someone said they've never felt nervous before a competition before. But what we're talking about here is the likelihood or possibility that the solutions are also within those relationships. So it's not just the problem being within those relationships, but it's also the solutions. And so, being curious with an athlete about what's happening, what do you need? It might be that an athlete needs more positive reinforcement. It might mean that they need some clarity from the coach that they are, in fact, starting that game or match, or they're not. And they need to know that ahead of time. Like these ideas of things being really mapped out and clear for athletes, I think, get missed a lot of the time. And so all this worry and anxiety and this lack of kind of confidence in self make a lot of sense when we get to know what's happening around them and the practices within the coaching staff and the team. And yet the conversation, as we're saying, goes back to this idea of like, oh, you just have this performance anxiety and you kind of like need to get your shit together. And get back. And I will credit, there are some really phenomenal coaches out there that really spend time with athletes and talk about this and support them. This is not a call to arms for every single coach out there. There's some coaching, that is going really, really well in this regard. And yet there are folks that don't take care of it, in terms of the support that their athletes need. And I think what we're getting at, and what sounds like is so important to you, Katie, is, making sure that, the dialogue about performance anxiety isn't just about anxiety about performance, because we know that what's coming into our offices when that is being named is the possibility of all these other situations that haven't been named yet because people haven't asked about them yet.
Totally. And I think even if the conversation is or isn't happening with the coach, for an athlete to be able to explore that for themselves, I guess what I would encourage one to do is, rather than looking at your performance, you also zoom out and get curious of, when did I start feeling more nervous? What changes are happening? What else is happening in my life? Is there anything seasonal that has happened in other times of my life that maybe could be contributing to this? Are there things that are left unresolved? So allowing yourself to also look beyond what's right in front of you to get curious about yourself as well. Hopefully there's an amazing coach there helping facilitate that discussion. But if there isn't, athletes can have that conversation with themselves, or of course clinically as well, to be able to learn what else is at play for them too. How come am I putting more pressure on myself? Am I more worried about the outcomes? Do I feel like I'm now in my senior season, and if I don't do it now, if all the ships are going to sail? Those are all really important pieces of the puzzle.
Well, and how I think what you're saying too is, and we see this a lot with, the clients that we work with, is how often even just asking what else has been going on illuminates some pretty significant changes. I mean, we hear, even as asking that question, we might hear, oh, my parents are getting divorced, or I'm going through a breakup, or I had to move apartments, or someone in my life died. I mean, these really significant things where we know we're going to impact what happens as an athlete, but yet there's this belief oftentimes that athletes are supposed to be superhuman and be able to just work through anything because as soon as they get on the court, they really just, their athletic, prowess shines, and we forget that they're human and have all these other parts of them that are happening at the same time that they're training and performing. And so, yeah, I think what you're naming is so key, that even if an athlete doesn't have a coach or even a parent or someone around them that is, checking in and asking those other questions, to just pause and have a conversation with self about, what's been going on. And maybe that helps me understand why I'm having a difficult time in practice lately, why I'm having a difficult time maybe with focus, or I'm feeling amped up more than usual. I feel like I'm on the verge of some kind of panic. And I think our response to that is what is so key. And rather than it being something that has to be fixed immediately, being able to just slow that down and understand what is happening, and having that make sense on some level and give ourselves permission to navigate through it. And like you said, maybe it is with someone like us in terms of a therapist or a counselor, but it might even just be with a friend or another teammate, to be able to externalize some of the things that are going on internally.
Absolutely. And I think making space for feelings, right? We oftentimes, especially in athletic systems, we worry that if we look too deep, we're going to get soft or we're going to lose our edge. And in reality, that can help you be able to push harder because you will have paid attention and flushed out the some of those other needs or underlying needs. You've addressed them, you've named them. Feelings don't generally last forever, right? So getting curious can help actually alleviate some of the acuity of them by learning what am I needing and what is my body trying to convey to me. If you can form a friendship with your feelings instead of this kind of alienation, that can go a really long way, even though that does it can feel really scary to partner with your feelings because so often you have to disconnect from them in order to be able to compete. But if you can check in with yourself outside of those key training blocks, it really can go a long way.
I thank Giovanna so much for this question. And you know, one of the other things she asked is it different than typical anxiety? And I think, I mean, we've kind of named that already, but really just wanting to, you know, offer to listeners that, you know, there are times where an athlete who maybe just struggles with general day-to-day anxiety, many of us deal with anxiety in lots of forms, and it can show up in kind of a sports arena and in terms of competition and performance and training, and but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's performance anxiety. And so I think, you know, it is different in the sense that people are kind of, you know, putting a lot of things in this bucket, like you were saying. And if we can just call it performance anxiety, it's a lot easier. And actually, I think you said this initially, if that's what gets people in the door, that is fantastic. And, you know, gets people having a conversation. The other thing is it's oftentimes difficult for people to know what they're feeling. And you and I have this language and this vocabulary because this is what we study and talk about and write about every single day. So it's easy for us to go, well, is it anxiety? Is it more grief? Is it more loss? Is it frustration? Is it, you know, whatever it may be. But I know, you know, several athletes this last year who have really, really struggled because of things that are going on in their life, and what they're doing on the court has been impacted. And I don't think they would call it performance anxiety, but it might be what someone else calls it for them. And then they're able to start a conversation with someone to, you know, dig at it a little bit more, perhaps. So, I do think it's different, but it also can be kind of one in the same depending on what somebody else is, you know, going through. What do you think? Would you agree with that, or would you add anything?
No, totally agree with that. I think, we do look at things from a really clinical standpoint, right? Of anxiety is in the DSM, performance anxiety is not, right? So thing people can have anxiety and that might impact performance, but that is different than performance anxiety, which I guess we should have defined maybe in the beginning. I think of performance anxiety and what I've seen come through with referrals of I'm simplifying here a bit, but basically nervousness to perform and my performance is declining. That is really different than this mental health need of that there might be a generalized anxiety disorder. Those are very different.
One thing that I wanted to throw out there as we kind of wind down is a colleague of ours and someone who has been done a kind of a video with us we have on our website is Nate Wilson Traceman, and he is a therapist and he's also a baseball coach, and he talks a lot about kind of performance in the sense of, again, knowing that that is the way that people get in and have a conversation. But I would look him up. I'll put some information about him in our show notes. But his Instagram is Mental Side of Sports. And I really like his videos and the trainings that he's been doing, talking about how we respond to these symptoms and what comes up. in order to kind of support athletes. He talked a lot about how he'll go in and meet with these teams and just have a conversation about having some feelings and some emotions and being able to, immediately kind of help some, athletes find a different tune in terms of how they're responding to what those feelings are. And so that's kind of his niche. I think it's a great, partner for us and can be a good resource for listeners as useful. I think I'm so glad that we talked about performance anxiety because I think, again, you and I have talked about it a lot, but I realize I say that. You and I have talked about it a lot is often one of my key terms on these episodes. But the funny part about it is it's so true, which is partly why we decided we needed a podcast because we just sit around and banter about some of this stuff ad nauseum. And so why not put it on some kind of recording? But I do think it's such a common conversation that people are having. And so hopefully it's helpful. I mean, I think we can keep digging at it too. If there's listeners that have some, follow-up questions or things regarding performance anxiety, definitely let us know. And I think we can break it down even more. We know that, we could talk about this for hours and hours, and we're just trying to bite off a little bit in the beginning here with these podcast episodes. It's possible that we'll move into a weekly episode format. We're kind of trying to tap into you all as an audience and see if what we're doing is helpful, if it, if it gets a response and, we might amp some things up. Let's do a few kind of housekeeping plugs before we head out today. So you can find us in terms of our website at athletesmentalhealthfoundation.org. You can also find us on Instagram under Athletes Mental Health Foundation. You can also send us your listener questions or comments, things you want us to talk about. Keep them at 30 seconds in terms of a voice recording. And you can, record that on your phone or, whatever device you have. And you can email that to sportsshrinks@gmail.com. So sports is plural and shrinks is plural. Sportsshrinks@gmail.com. We'll put that in the show notes as well. And then do you want to shout out our book? I feel like it feels silly these moments where we're trying to get used to this self-promotion. But
But
the book is a
it's
thing.
getting close, and
It
we're
is.
getting so excited because we've been working behind the scenes for years at this point in time. So to have it kind of inching itself out into the world feels really exciting. The book is called The Price She Pays, and we focus on female athletes and athletic systems and how we can make sure we brought as many voices into it as we possibly could, and it was such a lift, and it was so rewarding. And we wrote with Erin Strout, who's this, we always call her the word wizard. She's dynamo what she could craft with her words.
The very best,
Phenomenal.
the best.
The very best.
We were
Yes.
definitely spoiled, and once you read the book, you'll know why we have so much appreciation for what Erin Strout does, because she took the words that Katie and I have, which were, I mean, they weren't bad, but she definitely made them beautiful. And so, the reading of the book is definitely that much better because of what Aaron did. So you can find that and pre-order it if you would like on Amazon or Barnes and Noble or wherever it is that you get books. If you have a local bookstore that you want them to know about the book, you can, just go in and order it from them and then be in touch with us. If you find a bookstore that wants to have this book on their shelves, we got some ways to make that happen. So feel free to reach out to us and just thanks for listening. I guess we're wrapping up episode 3. It's been a blast so far. The really cool thing, I don't even think I've told you this, Katie. The really cool thing about episode 3 is we will be able to get better analytics after this episode goes live. And we get a little bit of a response and we get kind of a map more on what has been happening with the podcast. They like to have data of 3 particular episodes and then we'll get even more information. And so it'll be really cool to see who's listening. I will say, shout out to whoever's listening to us in Belgium. That is the, I know, look at that. The farthest listener so far. from where we are in Oregon. And so whoever you are, if you would like to let us know who you are, you know, find us on Instagram or email us. But thanks for listening. And so apparently we've gone international. And that seems like good enough as any place to end this week's episode. Thank you, everybody, for being with us.
Thank you.